played a full 90 minutes today, Velasco. What's your thoughts on that?
He's class, man. You know, he slipped that one through to Derek when Derek tried to square it to Omar. You know, just those bits and pieces around the 18, that's what we've been lacking. And he unlocks defenses. You know, Contreras does very good work with the ball, but Velasquez has that different level to where he can unlock a defense. And we've been lacking that, to be honest. And you saw it tonight, and he's not match fit. That's his first game in probably a couple of months. So for him to get 90 minutes, he slowed down towards the end. He started to become less effective, less dynamic, but that's normal. He's going to be a joy to watch. And, you know, we've got to find ways to get him and Contreras and those guys on the field together at the right times. And it's going to be exciting, you know. And I think it's going to bring another level of Contreras as well, another level to everybody, because, you know, you saw tonight some of his little dribbles and the way he goes past people. It's a little bit different, and it's going to reap its rewards, whether he's scoring the goals or creating them. I think we already saw tonight the quality he's going to bring to the table.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Loco, the Seriously Crazy fan podcast for El Paso Locomotive FC. I'm your host, Phil Bakke. I almost forgot to plug our sponsors. We're obviously brought to you by Golden Goal Press and Roughneck Scarves. A couple of awesome companies, one of which I need to patronize soon, I think, for some merch. But all that notwithstanding, we are a trio today. I'm joined for the first time in a while by Daniel Huerta, the resident defender. Dan, welcome back.
It's good to be back. It's been a while, so I'm getting ready to get back at it.
It's been crazy for kind of everybody. We're kind of settling back into somewhat normal recording schedules now, but we're joined again by Mika Burrell. Mika, it's always nice to have you in Bakke Studios.
Love being in Bakke Studios, and good to see our resident defender sitting across from me in the very sharp Mexico kit.
So, I mean, this is... We're wrapping up, obviously, a pretty frustrating kind of stretch for Locomotive, but they draw 0-0 against Real Monarchs, our second scoreless draw against that team this season, this time at home. And in a lot of ways, this draw, just speaking generally about this game, has this scoreless draw made you feel better or worse about where we're at in this kind of winless run of the last few weeks?
Better than last week, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting behind that goal the first half, and I thought for sure Omar and Derek were going to score. So I'm not that bummed out.
Yeah. So yeah. Chances created, lifting the spirits a little bit.
Yeah. We didn't play poorly by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, some parts of the game were very tedious, but overall an improvement from our display against San Antonio. Do quickly want to just shout out Christian because he got the prediction on point. And yeah, I agree with him that given Real Monarch's form coming into this match, I think 0-0 was as much as we could hope for, I think.
It was interesting. They had won 5 straight. So Monarchs obviously coming in a lot better shape than we were. Right. They were charging in. We were kind of limping in with all of these injuries as well. It's been a bit of an issue with the lineup that was named, though. Daniel, I mean, did it start to feel, at least in this game, like we were watching the Locomotive that we're kind of used to watching rather than the team that we've watched these last few weeks?
Yeah, most definitely. I think, it's like you mentioned earlier, I felt that energy from our new player with the new Seba. I think everything was very energetic, and I think everybody wanted to get on involved in the attack. You know, Chapa was very involved too. Yep. That was cool to see. He moves from side to side like crazy. But it felt good. Like I said, I wasn't too bummed out at the end because I was like, well, a few inches here, a few inches there, we would have won. So
that was something that was actually mentioned by Mark in the post-match. He said, you know, they've hit the post 3 times now in draws in the last few weeks, and we are, you know, a couple of inches here or there away from a few more wins in this run. But, I mean, Mika, obviously, like, in a run like this, you're looking for those breaks to go your way, and all of the, you know, well, if this and that, I mean, ultimately it's about getting the points in the bag.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, this is such a game of fine margins. I mean, you see right from the very first minute, we could have gone 1-0 up. I mean, Omar had a really great chance at goal. He rounds the keeper really well. It's not a, you know, it's not a issue of composure necessarily. I think it was just unlucky for him to bang it off the post. Had that goal gone in, I think it would have been a much different game because we were getting chances from the jump. So it's just, we say this every week, it feels like, but it's just about putting them away. And I mean, credit to Mark too. I think he recognizes that there needs to be some kind of change because he came out with a pretty different kind of tactical lineup. I think he started with like a diamond. So, yeah. So that was interesting to see. And I think that it worked pretty well. It's just putting it in the back of the net.
So, I mean, one of the things about that first chance, the initial chance is actually created. The ball's given away right on the edge of the area, and Seb Velasquez, the new signing, tracks back, makes a really good sliding tackle. The ball falls to Nick Ross, who plays it through to Omar. Did that initial chance, I mean, at least for me, it seemed, and I don't know if you guys agree, but for me, that was a big departure in terms of something that Velasquez is bringing, where we know he's pacey, we know he's skillful, we know he's energetic, but I was not expecting him to win the ball back as often as he did, pressing high. I mean, is that maybe a different avenue that we're looking at as well, where we're trying to put teams under pressure a little bit more from the forward line?
Yeah, I think the counter pressure, I think that's how everybody calls it, like
the Gegen press,
yeah, Man City press, whatever. Like, we've been doing that all year, but it seems like he brought on a whole new level of aggression towards it, and I don't think they were expecting that,
right?
So, because yeah, when he won that ball, they looked startled, and yeah, I mean, maybe Mark's looking for new ways to do that. So, hey. Good stuff.
One of the things, Mika, I think during the game in our group chat you mentioned is seeing him on the ball and then seeing his vision of the pitch itself. It seems like Seb has almost a more of that like 4D galaxy brain understanding of what's going on around him compared to the other guys on the field, where he's making decisions that, you know, are ahead of the defenders rather than kind of in line with what they'd expect.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what you need from your number 10 playing in the hole, especially behind two strikers, because you have to track both of those runners. And then, of course, we like to get it wide too. So he had a lot to kind of keep track of in that space. I was really impressed by the way he played. It seems like he's very multi-talented, multi-skilled. He's not one-dimensional. He can dribble, he can tackle, he can pass, and he can shoot, because he almost scored on his debut against his former club. So I think we really have a talent on our hands, and on another day, he might have been the one to get us the result. But overall, not a bad start from him at all in the Locomotive Blue. So
the first thing that I noticed was just when he first received the ball, his first couple of touches out of his feet, he's one of those players that you can almost tell immediately just by the eye test that he's different. He's a different level than what we've seen. He just has that sixth sense of where players are around him, and he can avoid that pressure so easily because his touch is so good. It's like he's got the ball on a string. I'd be surprised if he gave the ball away, you know, more than once or twice the entire night. And it's just something that, yeah, in terms of all the, everything he brings, it just, you can tell exactly why, when the opportunity arose, Locomotive took the chance to go get him.
Yeah. One thing too, that just quickly want to mention, one thing that really impressed me about the way he plays is he's got that kind of low center of gravity, and the way he turns is just so fluid. Like, it reminded me of the way that Xavi used to turn on the pitch for Barcelona. Like, you just full 90 degrees, 360, like, right, whenever, and just constantly scanning the pitch. I think that's a really great skill to have. I think probably it will lead to a lot of fouls against him.
Yeah.
Because he's so tricky, people are just going to, you know, run right into him. But I thought that was really good to see.
And it's similar to Kiesewetter in that he knows how to use his body to his advantage. We also saw the league debut of a guy who's been around the team, obviously, for a while, and he's played in the Open Cup. Jermaine Forda makes the starting goal for the injured Logan Ketterer. I mean, Daniel, the defense did Jermaine a lot more favors on Saturday than they did for him against Ford Madison.
Yeah, I think I counted, like, 3 saves.
Yeah, I think they ended up with 2 shots on goal, technically.
Yeah.
And then one was like a cross that he kind of had to go claim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one that was like sailing.
Maybe under the cross, but, you know, he was like a little concerned. But, yeah, 2 shots on target.
Yeah, I think they made it easy on him, that's for sure. But, hey, he could have been so nervous that one of those easy balls could have gone through his legs or something.
Yeah.
So good job to him on being composed. And he was asking for the ball. And I could tell a few times where Drew and Fox were like, yeah, I'm just going to play here. But, you know, credit to him, you know, first game in the USL Championship, maybe his highest level game he's ever played. MPSL? Yeah, I mean, he played MPSL with the New York Cosmos?
Cosmos, B, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, I mean, good job. I mean, he looked composed.
Yeah, that's what I the thing that I was looking for initially is, like, you just want a new guy coming into the team for the first time, or for the first time in a while, or since a bad game, you just want him to get some touches,
right,
and not have that first problem be a goal, you know, or something. So there was early on a ball kind of just went back to him, and he got a touch. He was able to put it down and just play a short pass out. And just all of those things, how he went about it, how he commanded, you know, he was talking well with the back four too, coming and claiming balls that were needed. And so it just, I don't know. It was a very composed performance. I think that's a good word, just composed, kind of calm performance when that's what was needed to get the clean sheet. So, I mean, to come in and provide that is big.
Definitely, yeah, and like you mentioned, it is a clean sheet, so as good a start as you can get in the league. So,
so we talked about the game kicks off. First off, I mean, a little bit of a different look for the Locos. They went with the navy blue with the sky blue shorts.
Yes.
Do you guys buy into? I mean, I played baseball growing up, so I'm extremely superstitious when it comes to like uniform stuff. Do you guys buy into kind of, hey, let's mix things up and, like, shake up the mojo a little bit around a team?
I want to say that was something that they made them do because, I don't know, when you see teams mix and match, I think they do it out of necessity more than anything. Like, maybe the ref was like, I don't know why, but use the sky blue shorts. Threw me off a little bit, but, I mean, whatever. We didn't lose, so.
What do you think about the navy blue, sky blue look? Do you think it's, like, too jarring, or does it actually kind of...
Like, with the home kit?
Yeah.
Like, how we... No, I liked it, actually. I think it made them a little bit more visible.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very superstitious, too, and also I know this makes no sense, but I always feel like a team in a darker color just looks slower. So when I see them wearing the sky blue, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, it's completely psychological. It's no basis in science unless someone wants to drop us a line and tell me why I'm right.
Yeah,
but,
Charles Fenwick, like, yeah. our data analyst, like, please,
I mean,
jump on
when
this.
We were in the white, I mean, we were balling out, so.
I don't know if you guys noticed that with the white, they wear the sky blue socks up, like, outside, inside out. That's how, because I was looking at pictures and then I was like, wait, what the hell? So you can see the El Paso letters being all messed up when you turn your socks up, like, inside out.
Yeah.
That's how they get white socks.
What?
They don't actually have white socks.
Our budget be like.
Hey, I mean, if they're going to keep buying, if they keep bringing in players,
yeah,
then they can wear, they can be cheap anywhere else they want. I don't care. If you're spending it on the team, I'm good. It's like the opposite of the Arsenal fan dilemma.
Like the complete opposite.
So from that chance, obviously that ball hits the post. I mean, there's a moment where I caught myself thinking, here we go again. Is that the pervading feeling of, you know, ball hits the post, like nothing's kind of going our way, we're not getting any of the breaks? Or was it more so we just created a clear-cut chance in the first minute, we should be able to see this out? Like, what was your kind of gut feeling when it clanged off the post?
My girlfriend, my daughter were with me. I think I literally went, put my hands over my head and was like this for like 30 seconds. I was like, you know, like, did we seriously, did that just happen? I was like, not again. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say that I was felt positive about it, but I didn't.
Right.
I mean, as soon as I saw that, I was like, this is just an indicator of our night. And I think Christian, I think he said as much in our chat, said something similar, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So when you got two strikers up top and one of them is Omar, I feel like because he's not on the wing, he doesn't build the confidence throughout the game of destroying fullbacks like we've seen in other games. And so, you know what I mean? I mean, he just gets kind of isolated up there. Or, you know, a lot of times he has his back to goal, and I really don't think that he's that kind of player. His touch isn't, for me, good enough to be playing with your back to goal.
Right.
As a striker.
Yeah.
He's much better running with the ball. And so when he doesn't get to do that, I feel like his confidence doesn't get built over the course of the game. And so I think he did really well to round the keeper. Like, that always amazes me when a player can do that. But it's just unlucky at the end. It really is.
It's one of those two where if it's not really even an exercise like worth doing, but the sheer fact that if that's on his, you know, if that's to Derek and it's on his right, he probably scores because he's got the whole goal to aim at. Right. But it's just because it's on Omar's left and the angle is that much more narrow from his left foot that it hits the post. Exactly. And that's what it's just crazy because, you know, all it is just where everybody is on the pitch at that kind of chaotic moment, and it ends up on his left foot and it hits the post instead of going in. Right. Where even if he had a little bit of time to drag it back to his right, like, we know he's got enough in his right foot to score, especially when the keeper is completely beaten. So, like, you know, if he had even had the moment to just slide it back to his right and just slot it in, that is, like you said, Mika, like the fine margins of what's going on, and just the fact it fell to his left, it hits the post. From there, I mean, all the pressure is on Monarchs. They could barely get out. Yeah. We talked in the past couple of weeks about how we would have in the 2 games ago, we had a solid opening 8 minutes and then immediately conceded. In this, that stretch lasted basically the entire first half without really letting Monarchs out. But we still can't capitalize. It's weird to talk about even because it's like, we've talked about different issues, but what do you even, I mean, as a team, if you're not scoring, what's the conversation there?
Honestly, there is not much you can do. I think that just comes from playing games and confidence, because there are some times where you get out on the field and, you know, nothing goes in. And then before you know it, the next time you come to training, you do 11v11 and, you know, whoever's playing up top, Derek, Omar, they just, even if they don't want to, they'll score, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, really, there's not much you can do finishing, but really it doesn't replicate the game scenario, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, I mean, we talked about, I think, during the game. So the chances that were created there in the first half, Couple of big ones, obviously, to fall to Derek. I think it's a Nick Ross pass in behind, and then a James Kiffey cross, if I'm not mistaken. A couple of decent chances for Derek. Is Derek's case one of confidence at this point? Like, are we talking about a striker who just is a little too much in his own head about scoring?
I think so. I remember when we were talking during the match and you both had said, oh, he's got to shoot that. And I'm like, oh, the keeper came out kind of well. And then I rewatched him like, not really. Yeah, he should have shot that. For him to pull it back is like he's thinking to himself, I'm not going to score this, so let me give it to somebody who will. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's more, you know, what more evidence do you need that this is someone who's struggling, who's in his head? I mean, it's just funny because he was so integral as far as scoring goes in the beginning, and it sucks to see him kind of in this rut because I do like him as a player and he works hard and he's not playing poorly in general.
Yeah, and I think that's important to highlight too, because it's easy to kind of, you know, slaughter a striker over not scoring, and that is kind of the easiest thing to point to. But in terms of his ability to stretch a defense and provide, I mean, he drifts out wide. He is able to make runs. He's a good dribbler as well. He earns a lot of fouls as well. He gets foul kicked a lot. So he's doing a lot right, and I guess it just goes back to the conversation of, you know, at some point it's just got to be that instinctiveness and kind of trusting yourself to be able to score.
Yeah, it's just a matter of trusting, and man, like, I bet you he's trying all kinds of different things, like, oh, maybe if I shoot this way, but sometimes if you just go back to basics and just, like, smack it and put your body down, just goes in, and then confidence is back.
And where's that line of, because this is something I've always thought about, like, where's that line of, okay, Derek is getting now, you know, he started two games in a row. Is that something, where's the line of, I'm starting and I'm earning more confidence because, you know, the manager showing confidence in me and I can prove something. Where's that tipping point of, okay, now he's played too many games and not scored to where his confidence is now actually being more badly, like, hurt? Whereas, like, if he's coming on as a sub, maybe he has less of a kind of burden where he's just kind of able to play free. And, you know, if he scores, he scores, but he's not really, there's not the expectation that's put on a guy who's a starting striker in the league.
That, honestly, if I'm being completely honest with you, I've had a lot of different coaches, and it just depends on how much the coach likes you. Because there have been coaches that give you a chance for one game, and that's it. You will never see the field again. But if a coach has confidence in you, doesn't matter if you play poorly for 10 games and then finally you start to pick up your slack, he's going to leave you on the field because he trusts you. So if Derek feels Mark's trust, he's not going to be like, oh, man, like, I'm never going to play again, I think. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he plays a lot. So yeah. It's just hard. I don't know. I think I'll just have to defer to Daniel on that. Since he is a player, it's hard for me to kind of picture or, you know, imagine that dynamic. But I don't know. You don't see Mark really, like, dig out any guys either or just, like, bench them arbitrarily. So I don't know. But he's hard to drop because he contributes in other ways.
Right.
And so that's kind of the catch-22, I guess you could say.
So, I mean, the one big positive across this whole game, as we talked about, the defense, it's the same for in defense that were named for San Antonio. And obviously that went extremely poorly. Fox and Drew both blamed themselves, like, for goals that were scored, you know, by San Antonio. So that back four is essentially named out of necessity, right? Like we have no other fit defenders. So those are the four that are going to play. How big is it that from one game to the next, you see such a difference in just the composure, the control, and the overall performance of a back four defensively, from, you know, just literally a matter of days from a Wednesday to a Saturday? You see those guys, obviously, you know they have to go out and perform, but they do it in such a way that it is, you know, they allow two shots on target the entire game. What does that mean just to have guys that can bounce back from a poor performance like that?
Yeah, it means the world, because, you know, I was just, it goes back to confidence too. But as a defender, for you to, the way I saw it in this game is that the back four just did the most basic game that you can think of.
Right.
But it works. As a defender, if you just take care of the basics, which is defend, you know, be aggressive, and just do the simple touches, you're more than likely going to have a good game. And I think all four of them did that this game, especially Fox and Drew. You know, Drew especially, he bounced back tremendously from last game. So,
we always talk about Drew being kind of a, he's very good at doing the stuff that Chiro doesn't. You know, Chiro's the calm one, he's the more aggressive one. Did you see in this game kind of a deviation where Drew kind of took that role on and let Fox be the more aggressive of the two of them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what the problem was last time out against San Antonio, was just lack of communication between the two of them. This match was completely different. They seemed to both be on the same page with one another, and both kind of were playing to each other's strengths, I think. I think if they had it their way, they'd both be on the ball all the time and rushing forward and that kind of thing. But yeah, definitely Becky did let Foxy, you know, kind of dictate things more. And Fox played a couple stellar passes that, I mean, some of our best attacking moments started with him, him recognizing the space in front of him and going for the ball, or, you know, playing like a line breaky pass. It was a really good display from the both of them.
The one portion of the team we haven't mentioned yet is the midfield. Obviously, it more or less became, you know, with that diamond shape, you have Chapa and Ross playing as the kind of box to box, or, you know, the number eight roles, whatever you want to call it, just a more dynamic position. Obviously, with Richie sitting in that defensive mid position. Ross and Chapa getting a lot more involved in the attack, and obviously a little bit, you know, it didn't amount to a goal, but that seems like a little bit of a departure from what Mark had set out for them role wise right? Like they weren't getting forward this much in the past, it seems. And now, do you think he's just let those guys off the leash a little bit?
Maybe. Sometimes it kind of freaked me out how wide they were. Like, I would see Chapa, like, all the way in the line.
Yeah.
But it works. I mean, Richie does the dirty work, and then they just create.
I mean, Mika, when we're playing a diamond like that, speaking about what Daniel's talking about, do you think there's an onus on those? Basically, the width has to be provided by somebody, and it's most often going to either be like the fullbacks or those two central midfielders in that diamond shape. It's not going to be, the strikers are not going to get as wide, and obviously the 10 is, he's kind of got license to float around. But so, I mean, do you think that it's just in an effort to provide the width that we see from when Mark's played that, you know, traditional kind of 4-3-3 that we've seen? Do you think that's just his effort in Chapa and Ross providing that width, as well as providing stability in midfield, just asking them to do more?
Yeah, I think when you play that kind of diamond, that's what you're trying to do, is have the best of both worlds, where you have that width, but you can also kind of retreat when you need to. And I also think that's the luxury of having Richie Ryan, is even with as much football as he has in his legs, you can trust him to just kind of sit there and be, you know, be that pivot. For all my football manager players out there, I think what Ross and Chapa did this week is like the classic like Metsala type player, where right. you're like a midfielder that's comfortable going wide and getting more involved. So I like that we're kind of switching it up as far as tactics are concerned. I worried in the beginning of the season, okay, we're just going to play 4-2-3-1 and that's it. It's a little bit boring sometimes. So I like that we're trying different things, and we certainly didn't play badly with this diamond kind of setup. And it just makes me wonder what it would look like if we had all our personnel for that kind of formation, you know, namely Yuma and Chiro and the like. So,
and that's a good point. I mean, even when we think about and maybe we can talk about this more in the New Mexico United preview. So we'll kind of shelve the conversation of just like whether Mark sticks with the diamond and just puts our you know, returning players into that, or whether he goes back to what we've seen with the kind of 4-3-3 in that approach. But we can talk that in a little bit, because I think that's an interesting conversation for New Mexico. In the second half, things got a lot more sloppy, I guess you would say. Things were a little more desperate, because we were trying to score. We're trying to go win the game. Real Monarchs obviously feeling the opportunity to, all they need is a goal to snatch a win there late on. So as the second half was kind of wearing on, Sebastian Velasquez playing his first 90 minutes in upwards of like 9 months, as he got tired, we looked less sharp, and we talked about this before we recorded, but as he was tiring, we also seemed just as a team to kind of lose our edge. Does that just kind of emphasize what an influence he'll have on the team going forward?
Yeah, because at the end of the game, as you talked about that he got tired, I saw a lot of balls just dumped in the box, kind of just, hey, let's see what happens, you know, like your high school coach tells you, like, hey, just dump it in the box, see what happens. So I mean, it's good and bad, because then we're relying on Sebastian to be 100% for 90 minutes all the time, and that's hard to rely on,
right?
Yeah, there were a lot more long balls, and I made some notes about that. I mean, luckily, some of the long balls were accurate ones, so I'm happy right. about that, because I absolutely hate, like, lump-it football. Like, I think it's just ugly and sure. and just not the way that Mark Lowry wants to play, certainly.
What I was going to say, like, as an Arsene Wenger stan, oh, like, you're not, yeah. you're never going to.
No, like, one touch it and walk it in. Like, that's what I want. No, I mean, the long ball has its purpose. You know, if you can do it well, which Drew Becky certainly can, so that's mm-hmm. fine. But yeah, it did seem like we were just getting tired and trying to bypass midfield. And so that gives me a little bit of cause for concern, because Velasquez's minutes need to be managed. I mean, Mark's going to keep throwing him in. Like, we were so wrong at the beginning of the season when we said that he would ease players in. That's absolutely not what goes on in this league and in this club. So, right. But that being said, he just came from, you know, the Korean second division. He didn't have a whole lot of minutes there, as yeah. you told us. And so that situation needs to be monitored, especially given our injury bug that's going around the locker room. So,
As that second half wore on and we got towards the end of the game, there was a couple of moments where the referee, and I will say this is not, there's no criticism of the referee coming through in this, because I would say, and you guys can check me on this, but I would say that was, in terms of the referee, the best managed game we've seen in USL so far, because it was so non-controversial, basically. Like, he made the right decisions. There were a couple of calls that I was like, maybe this way, that way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything as kind of blatant as what we've seen these past few weeks, where it's just like every week we're tearing our hair out because it's a either a crazy decision or refs watching the video board or whatever. It was just like a markedly like not controversial. Like I know he didn't have a ton of controversial decisions to make, but it seemed like he managed the game well.
Yeah, agree with that. I don't know though. Wasn't there a moment where maybe Chapa handled the ball in the area?
So that was my next question. Okay. So yeah, the penalty claims at both ends on this one. Now the penalty claim should have been stronger in my opinion when Lokomotiv when Velasquez went down having his shirt pulled as he dribbled past a Monarchs defender. Mm-hmm. But there are two moments at the other end that on another day, different referee, different crew, could have potentially been issues for Lokomotiv. So the Chapa handball is the first one. Ball goes over the top. Chapa is running to track the man and the ball. And the ball bounces up, hits his hand. He controls the ball after that. And it takes the ball away from a Monarchs player. For you guys, do you think that that's a handball? Because he doesn't see the ball, but it definitely hits his hand, and it definitely helps him out of the situation. So, like, for you, is that a handball?
It's happened to me before, and it's a PK on me. So, we got lucky, I think.
Yeah, I mean, isn't IFAB changing the rules on the handball? Because, I mean, there's always this debate about intent. Like, is it relevant? Is it not?
Yeah.
I don't claim to know the handball rule by heart, but
right. So the
I just think about, you know, the Champions League final at the
right.
Sissoko. It was like there's no right. intent whatsoever, but that was called immediately.
It's yeah. Like, and so the interesting thing about the handball rule now is that IFAB has changed the handball rule to make it so if it is if the player's stopping like some kind of goal scoring opportunity, whether it's a cross or a shot or whatever, then intent isn't taken into account because mm-hmm. you've illegally, or if you score with your hand, intent isn't right. taken into account because mm-hmm. you can't, you know, that would be crazy if you could yeah. accidentally score handballs. Oops. Like I accidentally punched the ball into the back of the net.
But then at the same time, don't you think kids in the academy are going to start learning, just kick it at his hand? Well, I mean, where do your hands go?
Right.
I get not, don't extend your body, obviously, right? But yeah. the requirements they're putting on defenders now to avoid handball to me is just harsh.
So
I don't know. What does the defender think?
Well, and it's crazy because, you know, the other day I was playing just Sunday League, and then you know how they changed the rule where the player doesn't have to wait for the ball to get out of the box to, like, if it's a goal kick?
You yeah.
know? Mm-hmm.
And so I went to go grab it in the box, and then, of course, the ref's like, oh, it's got to go out.
Right.
And I'm like, but no.
Yeah.
And his response was, FIFA hasn't sent us anything, basically. Like, if they're not going to follow the rules.
Right.
So, honestly, like, the way I learned when I was little is if my hands are tied to my body, then it's not good. A handball.
Right.
But as soon as it leaves my body, then it's a handball.
And
it don't matter.
And that is taking the position and all that. Like, if it is next to your body, then you're probably good. If it's outstretched, that's where you start to be. But the other question is, and this is, like, probably too technical, at USL Championship, if you can, like, reach out to us. I don't know if those IFAB rules, because those went into effect in June,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know, because the season started in March,
right.
I have no idea if the rules apply yet. Like, are they going off of the old IFAB rules until the season ends?
Right, till next season.
And, I mean, obviously we're not getting any explanations out of anything from the referees, so we'll never know. Like, it'll just be, like, whatever that ref thinks.
Right. There's a possibility where they're just, like, they don't go and be like, USL, hey, make sure you remember the new rules. Like, there's a possibility they don't even.
So the next one, so that's what, I mean, the Chapa one, to me, is, like, completely ref dependent. Like, one ref could have called it, another ref could have, and they both probably would have been a little bit right. Like, that's, so I'm glad we got away with that one. The next one was a little later in the game, would have been an absolute dagger through the hearts of through the hearts of Locomotive fans. But James Kiffey kind of goes through the back of a guy whose ball's coming into the box. He's kind of tracking it, and James jumps through his back. And very vehement arguments by the Monarchs players for a penalty on that. For you guys, is that a foul, what James did going through the back, or is that just him trying to get to the ball, or is it just, you know, the contact that you risk in the box type thing?
As long as his arm's wearing up in the air, I don't think it's a foul.
Yeah, I guess. I just wish that he was better positioned there in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. Which is probably why he has to create that contact. Because he's like, oh, I'm beat. So I guess for me, it's either way.
Yeah. And that's what... So, yeah. I think for both, it's... They're both 50-50 decisions. And mm-hmm. I'm glad the referees decided not to give them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Obviously. But it is something that... Probably on the road, we may have been a little more at risk of giving penalties away, just because it seems like referees are more likely to be favoring like the home team. And I'm not trying to say that to call their like reputation into question or anything like that. It's just purely like I think people are more inclined, especially when a crowd is there like yelling about it.
Right.
I think they're more inclined to give it when there's like an uproar as soon as it happens, because they're like, well, if they all saw it, then
It's kind of normal, I guess. Happens everywhere.
So the game like is kind of reaching the ending stages. Everybody's looking around like, okay, who can come on and change this game? And we've only named six subs. Chiro still wasn't even fit. He was on the bench, but like he's there for like moral support. I think they basically name him as like a coach.
I could do that.
Yeah.
I'll be there for moral support.
But yeah, they named six subs instead of seven. And really there's three players or three attacking players on the bench. Edson, Sebastian Contreras, and Memo are the three. So Edson and Sebastian come on for Derek and Omar late on. What did you guys think about the switch, and did it bring, I mean, it obviously didn't bring a goal, but what did you think about those guys once they came on? Like, were they effective in what they were trying to do?
I can't remember anything that they did, honestly. I saw like Edson running like crazy trying to like win balls.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's face it, if you give Seba 5 minutes, like there's not much he can do. Like
that was what kind of struck me. Like Seba, it just looked like he wasn't really up to the speed of the game. Like someone fizzed a pass into him like right after he came on and he totally miscontrolled it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's just a matter of a guy who's used to starting and used to having the whole warm-up and all that time to really get into the game and kind of grow into the game? Do you think he's just not really suited to that kind of super sub role?
Yeah, definitely. And first of all, neither of them are strikers in my mind. You can definitely tell what Mark's intent was in bringing them on is to win the game. So fair play to him for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with you about Seba Contreras. I mean, subbing him on is like subbing on Mesut Ozil. Like, it's just like these are tempo setter guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're not difference makers at that stage of the match, usually.
Right.
So, yeah, for him it was kind of pointless.
I feel like Contreras coming on was almost maybe if we win a free kick close enough to goal, then he'll take it and he might score it.
Yeah. Although, if at this point, like, the other Seba would have taken that shot, honestly, like, he just seemed to be on the ball all the time.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It was a weird change because, like you said, neither are strikers. And, but at that time in the match, at that point, you're just kind of looking for, like, okay, something's got to change, and we don't really have the edge now. And without – you'd almost – the player you'd want to bring on in that situation is Derek. more right. so. Like, or, I mean, dare I say, Calvin. yeah. Shout out to Calvin. He started for Tulsa tonight, so much love to Calvin. He'll always be in Seriously Loco's hearts.
Oh, yeah.
Always showed the show love.
CR7. So
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, CR7. But, I mean, is that where the injury bug, you're just like, well, all right, there's only so much we can do. Like, there's only so many players that we can have when our main goal scorer is hurt.
Yeah, we have, like, zero depth. Like, you know, like, you look at the bench, and Mark's probably like, well, shit. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone from the club is listening and you're still in the mood to sign players. Maybe sign, like, a depth striker. I don't know. Just
fine. At this point, like, I'm good with, you know, if we're talking, like, I don't know, I kind of think I would like to see Memo just given, like, 20 minutes to run around and just see what happens.
Yep.
Hat trick.
Because he's, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I know this is probably weird because he did his goal scoring in, like, MPSL. Yeah. And it's obviously a different level. It's obviously that. But I mean, we're talking about goal scoring as kind of a factor of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it takes a lot of skill. It takes, and we're not taking away from like these high caliber players that are able to do way more,
right.
you know, than any of us sitting at the table, except maybe Dan, you know, that's but is there maybe not something to do? Like, it doesn't necessarily matter. Like, for a game, we'll say, like, maybe over the course of a season, a player who's succeeded at the lower levels may struggle to assert himself over a whole USL championship season. But in the course of one game, I mean, Memo's scored plenty of hat tricks in NPSL.
Yeah.
What's to say that he couldn't bag one in the late stages of a championship game?
Yeah, I mean, and I'll tell you this, it's a lot easier to bring him on because it's like you said, like, he's not going to hurt the game, you know, and he's got pace for days. Like, the guy can run, and at coming at the 75th minute, he's going to run circles, you know, around defenders, and why not get a shot on goal and see what happens?
So the game ends 0-0, obviously a little frustrating for everybody involved, but there's also kind of so Sebastian Contreras comes on as a second half sub, doesn't really look himself, and couple of social media moments and post game moments that are maybe hinting at the fact that Sebastian is a little unsettled at Lokomotiv. I mean, Daniel and Mika, you guys are the sleuths on this one, so. I mean, Daniel, I think you brought it up first, just conversations just kind of floating around the club. Is Seba causing an issue, or is it just a conflict of personality, or are they actively looking to move him? I mean, what's going on with Seba Contreras?
I mean, just rumor has it that he is leaving. So, and I mean, I think you can kind of see that he's bummed out. Not very, like, come on, he's our number 10. He should be more involved and excited. But, hey, you never know. Still rumors.
And Mika, it was your detective work just at the end of the game. A little moment between, you know, or a lack thereof between the manager and Seba.
Yeah, I always do my rewatch before we record the podcast, and during this rewatch, I just happened to let it play all the way till the end, even though the game was over. And you know, you see Mark Lowry shaking everybody's hands, shaking the referee's hands, his players, and you know, he looks right at Seba Contreras and just kind of claps and walks away. Continues to shake the hand of the next person, though, and so I don't know. I mean, you're not there. The context is hard to tell when it's on camera, but it does look strange, just because he shook literally everybody else's hand. I did, you know, I asked somebody at the club, I said, you know, kind of half joking, half wanting to know, like, you know, are we moving on a certain playmaker, and was promptly shut down. So I don't know. I mean, if you wanted to deny, you could just deny it, right? But
right.
Who knows?
It's a weird situation, because obviously we've spent a lot of time on the show, you know, praising Seba. He's obviously a very talented player. We all thought, just as Velasquez was brought in, we kind of assumed that it was to enhance what, you know, Seba already brings to the team. And now it's looking, or feeling at least, a little more like a direct replacement for Seba, which explains too, like, moving on other players and just the way the roster's kind of shifted.
Yeah.
It just seems all a little too kind of too linked to be, like, coincidental.
Yeah, and at this point we've thoroughly confused the listeners because they're both named Seba, which just
yeah.
makes it worse.
No, bringing in Velasquez is looking like a more of a replacement for Contreras, I should say. So, but yeah, however it shakes out, it the bottom line is that obviously there's decision makers at the club that are gonna do what's right, and they spend, you know, a lot more time with the players and everything than we do. We see them during the games, and that's the interaction that we get. You know, we're not in training day in and day out and in the meetings. So, whatever's playing out, we hope that it works out for the best for the club and the player, whatever the situation is. So that's ultimately what matters. But yeah, I mean, it ends 0-0. It's a tough one to take because it was so dominant. In so many ways, Lokomotiv creating tons of chances, ended up with 12 shots from inside the box. And that's just at that point, like, you kind of just have to hold up your hands and be like, all right, yeah. Well, we did enough, but there just has to be an improvement in terms of putting goals away. So, but we will get to the listener questions as we power along. So the first is a comment from at Lutet Minor. Two goals in the last six matches has me praying, crossing my fingers, staying awake all night to catch a shooting star to wish upon, throwing all my coins in wishing wells, and carrying my lucky rabbit foot so that the orthodontist comes back to give New Mexico a full set of braces.
I think we all want a full set of braces.
Yep.
That is, and I will say, just as an update, Mark said post-game against Real that 100%, you know, barring any setback, and this is me knocking on my dining room table. All of us are knocking. Barring any other setbacks in training over the next, you know, week until the United game, exactly a week from today, that Chiro, Yuma, and Jerome Kiesewetter will all be back and available for selection at New Mexico. The only question mark still of the regular starters is Logan, who he said was 50-50. And just to, I would say the long layoff gives him a better chance. But Mark said that Jerome and Chiro were 50-50 for the Real Monarchs match, and they obviously weren't fit for that. So I think his 50-50 is a little less than 50%, maybe.
Right. Like 40-49.
Sorry. So yeah. So that's the kind of the update of the injuries, or the major injuries anyways, as we're tracking. Nick Ross played, obviously, the full match this time around, having had a real bad cut on his knee against San Antonio, was able to still play the full match against Real Monarchs. So so that was actually a boost, I would say, compared to, I did not think Nick was going to be able to play. Starts, plays a great game, and
yeah,
everything's good. So at Paul B 915 said, any idea how our injury situation compares with other teams in the West? I think we answered a similar question on the last episode. But I definitely don't know, just because of the lack of transparency of injury reports in the USL. Like, yeah. I don't know. I know that other teams are, have fitness problems and players are going in and out. In terms of having, six first team injuries or whatever, I don't think anyone was really at that level. Yeah. But I'm not sure where it fits in context with the rest of the West, at least. But everybody, I think it's safe to say, like, at this point of the season, with the amount of matches everybody's playing and the size of the squads, like, I think it's safe to say everyone's probably having, like, some injury problems.
Yeah.
Right.
And you only hear about the real bad ones, Like, oh, get well soon, ACL repair, Like,
right.
They're never going to tell you, like, oh, he's got, like, a mild strain. Like, he'll be back next week.
Mm-hmm. Right. We also got Charles Fenwick, obviously. So he actually brought up the minutes played and kind of in context of injuries. He just said trying to provide some hashtag content without jinxing anyone into an injury. And so he went into the stats and sorted, locomotive players by minutes played this season. Omar is the most, but two guys very high on the list that, are veterans, are James Kiffey and Richie Ryan. So he just said, just some random-ish notes. Not sure that anyone would have pegged Richie Ryan, the oldest player on the team, to be 20 for 20 on appearances at this point in the season and be the last player to miss minutes. He's already well past the number of starts and minutes that he put in for FC Cincinnati last year. So he had 16 starts and only played 1,262 minutes last season, the entirety of last season. He started 18 games for us and played 1,621 minutes, and we're halfway through the season. So Richie Ryan, I mean, is that a conversation that also needs to be had, where Richie's gonna, we talked about managing minutes obviously for Seb Velasquez coming into the team, but Richie having already surpassed his total for an entire season last season in minutes, is that a guy that we're gonna have to get used to taking some planned breaks?
I think it all depends on, I mean, I'm sure they all take care of themselves like pro athletes do, but I think he would be smart enough to be like, hey, you know what? I'm not feeling so great, self me out. So I guess it all depends on how he listens to his body. And if he's feeling good, then I don't see why we would take him out. And he'd be mature enough to be like, hey, you know what? Suit me out for like a few games or something.
Right.
I think I said this on another pod, but it's just tough because I think he's our only true six.
Right.
And so,
yeah.
With
yeah.
the way that we want to play, I don't know. I mean, I suppose
Yuma can could, he yeah. can do it, but yeah, his style is definitely
yeah.
different than yes. than what Richie does. They're both right. holding mids in kind of their own way.
Yeah,
but Yuma definitely has a, I would say, a more aggressive yeah. kind of style. Yeah. Both in how he wins the ball back and how he possesses and attack and passes the ball. Right. I think he's a little more aggressive than
yeah, yeah most definitely.
He's more like shuttling and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Yeah.
The one thing I'll say, I think Richie, the way he plays allows him to play more minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's very intelligent about his like energy conservation.
He's like yeah. Pirlo, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
There's only a couple of moments that he's going to pick very carefully, like when he's putting a sprint in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's how Richie almost manages his own minutes yeah. while playing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And many times he doesn't even have to put a sprint because his positioning is excellent.
Right. Exactly.
So
he doesn't have to like sprint back 20 yards because he's like, oh crap, I forgot about this guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's always there. So,
yeah.
The other random notes, fun fact about Kiffy that I didn't realize until today, he played every minute of Sacramento Republic's matches in 2017 when they won the USL, and he was, so he was ever present every single match for Sac Republic. So a bit of an Iron Man, James Kiffy.
He's a bad dude. I mean, honestly, like every time I see him on the field, he never looks tired. I mean, he just goes and crosses the ball, tracks back, makes a tackle. So impressive.
Looking at the stats today, he's one of the best crossers in the league. So
yeah.
But yeah, no, he looks fine every time he's on the pitch. It's crazy too because he's always getting into it with people, and I'm right. like that expends some energy, you know, aside from just playing the game. But yeah, he and Richie Ryan are doing bits.
So as for Omar, in August 2015. He was substituted into a match for Tampa Bay Rowdies while they were still in the NASL against Jacksonville Armada. And Derek Gebhard stepped onto the pitch 3 minutes later. So the future strike partnership of El Paso Locomotive was playing against each other as subs in the NASL just 4 years ago. So nice little fun fact.
Yeah, that's cool.
In a Florida derby, I guess you might say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Tampa Bay versus Jacksonville.
Nice.
I don't think that qualifies as like a North Florida derby.
No, because they're like distinct regions.
Yeah,
right?
Jacksonville's like its own thing.
Yeah,
like Tampa is obviously like Gulf Coast and right. more central, I think. So
right,
I don't know Florida geography that well, but decently enough to get by. So, and then we had Mao come in, Mauricio Muniz. So is not having Jerome playing really affecting the team, or could they have beat Real Monarchs without him?
We could have. It could have been 3-0. But
could have been 10.
Yeah. Oh, man. It just hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think this team looks to that kind of, like, talisman on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerome was definitely that when he was, you know, scoring all those goals. And now, in his first ever game, it looks like they're putting that burden on Velasquez.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way that he played the game and his energy, it was mirrored by his teammates. And when he dropped off, they dropped off. And, you know, I know in the last podcast I called for someone to kind of take this team by the scruff of the neck. But at the same time, like, guys got to have – you got to find it within you as well to keep your level high when you're on the pitch. Because, you know, Mark has said it in his press conferences. You need to make the most of your minutes and – again, I don't think we played poorly, but it's just somebody got to score. Like even just an ugly goal, like just get something.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, yeah. And it is. It's just something that, I don't know, like we said, it's just it is frustrating to go through it. And I'm sure it's as frustrating for the team to go through, probably more so just feeling like you're doing everything that you can and just not coming away with anything. So yeah, in this case it's just a matter of like we said earlier, I think it's a matter of a couple of these guys just trusting themselves because they're obviously super talented players. They bring so much to the team, and it's just a matter of them being able to have the confidence and trust their instincts. Like, you know, some of the best goals that Jerome scored this season, most of his goals, honestly, are, instinctive finishes where, you know, whether it's the flick against New Mexico or, you know, like, or Sac Republic, excuse me, like those type of goals where he's right in front of the goal and he doesn't have time to say, okay, I'm going to take a touch, I'm going to take it down, whatever. No, it's first time finish or it's, you know, a snap decision, whatever. Those are the goals that he scores. And so it's just in that moment, trusting that, you know what, I'm going to take the right touch. Like this first touch is going to be enough. That's it. It's not, I don't need to take a touch or, whatever. You know, I'm going to take this on the head, or I'm going to let it fall to my feet, whatever. Just right. trusting himself to make the right decision. So, yeah, it's just decision-making, I think. And I don't know. Ultimately, these guys just have to believe in their own abilities. But that's it for listener questions. A little lean week. I mean, due to the nature of the game, I think it was a little...
Yeah,
I think it just dragged people a little bit because it was like,
yeah,
it was tough. But we have a big one to look forward to next week, Wednesday night, New Mexico United in Albuquerque. We're kind of, I don't know, like, obviously there are arch enemies, but both of us are kind of in.
Slump.
Similar kind of slumps right now.
Theirs is worse. So.
Theirs is worse. And I mean, just for context, we're looking at obviously the Locomotive, despite like all the struggles, sitting sixth on 29 points. And New Mexico United, before they kicked off against Sac Republic just a little while ago, are on 26. But they can go level with us on points if they win tonight. So they lead 1-0 right now, which I'm pretty bummed about. But with the clubs going through kind of that climb and New Mexico obviously starting, you know, they were the kind of the darlings of the USL for a while. Since then, they've fallen off quite a bit. They had the Open Cup run, but we're now kind of in the same spot where we climbed above them. Now we're back down pretty much level with each other. How big is this match being? Like, not only is it a rivalry match, but now it means a lot in terms of the table as well. Like, how is that for the team going into when it's basically for us becoming like as close to a must win as you can get?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on how intense they want to play this game. But if it turns out to be a game where it's really, really intense, and then I think it will become like a legit derby, not just like a, oh, hey, we're like neighbors.
Yeah.
So it's a must win for both teams, I think. So I really hope we take it.
Yeah, me too, of course, obviously. And to be fair, the first iteration of this derby, if you will, was a pretty contentious one. And so I can only imagine that's going to continue. New Mexico United, they concede a lot. And so I really hope that Jerome Kiesvetter will be fit and feeling it. I think he's the kind of player that gets up for these kind of matches. And so if he comes back, I think we have a good chance of coming away from Albuquerque with 3 points. Because, yeah, that defense is porous. In their last 6, they've scored 4 goals and conceded 13.
Yeah.
They only have 2 clean sheets on the season. We have 9. And I don't want to hear from New Mexico United fans that it's because they attack and they're exciting and this, that, the third. You can play exciting attacking football just like Phoenix do. And they lead the league in, or I think maybe just the West, maybe the league, in clean sheets and goals. So
yeah.
Both can be done. And I'm sure that probably annoys them even more because they hate Phoenix. But
Phoenix is absurd. Also, they've scored 52 goals and allowed 17. So
yeah,
I don't even.
That's like
Phoenix is like
the Manchester City of like
city levels of just dominance right now in the championship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question earlier that we posed to ourselves, and now I'll bring it back, is we've seen the diamond now. We've seen the way that we operate in that shape. And assuming we have the reinforcements of Chiro, Yuma, and Jerome Kiesvetter coming back to the team, do you think we're more likely against, you know, the way that New Mexico play, do you think we're more likely to stick to that and play that type of style? Or do you think the way New Mexico play, we might get, you know, Omar and maybe, you know, whether it's Ross or maybe it's Velasquez, you know, out on the wing. Do we go back to that more traditional kind of 4-3-3 shape that we've seen at the beginning of the season with Jerome up top, and or do we play this kind of two striker system with maybe Jerome and Omar playing off each other?
Nah, I think if Jerome's healthy, I think they go back to him being the lone striker and Omar at Wyatt and Ross. But if not, I think he plays a diamond again.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if Jerome comes back, I completely agree. I think we go back to having traditional wide players that can give their fullbacks issues. I think the diamond's a little experimental for a road game of this importance. But I don't know. I feel like we predict a lot of things on here, and Mark just trolls and says, I'm not doing that.
He's like, now let's play five defenders.
Yeah, three at the back, like, bruh. But, yeah, I hope to see a more traditional, or not traditional, but more a formation that has traditional wide players, because I think that's going to be one of the keys to the match, really, is having that threat as well.
Right.
So
I enjoy the idea of Omar on Josh Suggs.
Yeah, yeah.
And just let him just run at him all game.
That's a red card.
And let him get a red card.
Yeah, that's a red card.
Because he's not going to get torched all game. He's just going to be off the field. Like, if he's getting torched, he's going to do something to get sent off.
Right.
So I do enjoy the idea of Omar getting kind of free run at their fullbacks. Like he had, you know, in the few weeks previous. And we talked about, you know, how we had started in the run where we were winning games. Omar touching the ball a lot was kind of key to that. And I think improving his kind of influence over the game, not necessarily by, you know, because when he plays as a striker, it just means he's touching the ball less. And he's, like you said earlier, Mika, like he's playing in a different way, and he's not able to kind of assert his influence as much as he does when he plays out wide. So, I mean, that is definitely a big pro in the, like, go back to the 4-3-3 column.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next thing would be, so obviously Seb played in that 10, or so Velasquez played in the 10 in this diamond and looked great. And so I'm thinking if we can get almost the way that, I don't know, the way that, like, somebody like Coutinho played in on the left for Liverpool, where, yeah, he was technically, when you put out a 4-3-3, he's on the left, but he's drifting in, and he's able to play as that 10, but he's also able to kind of operate in space. That is kind of my idea of, like, where Velasquez fits in the 4-3-3. Because I wouldn't put him in the midfield necessarily, because, you know, you have the... I think Mark goes with, like, a workhorse-type midfield. Like,
exactly.
I don't know how you guys feel. Yeah. Like, he's going to try to pack the midfield and just keep New Mexico from, like, having any kind of control.
Yeah, exactly. No holes in the middle. I don't think he wants that, so...
Yeah, and it was... effective from what I can remember the last time out, is they couldn't deal with us in midfield. So, and all the passing, they're used to playing, I think, teams that play a little bit like them, a little bit more direct. So, I think if our style can frustrate them again, we've got a really good chance. And what a way to get out of this slump, honestly. That'd be awesome for
that
the
is,
fans and for the team.
That is ultimately, like, I think that's where everybody's mind is at right now, where it's like, okay, put all of the run and the last, you know, whatever, 6-7 games, whatever, put that shit behind us.
Yep.
This is the only game for, you know, for 90 minutes, this is all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to, other teams have shown that, you know, because early season, New Mexico was like, obviously playing, you know, scoring a bunch of goals, playing just free-flowing, whatever. They're winning a bunch of games. And in the last few weeks, everybody's kind of shown, okay, you know, Isotopes Park is not the fortress that it was made out to be.
Yeah.
You know, like, people have gone there and got wins and like, Like Sac Republic went and whooped ass down there in Albuquerque. So it's definitely possible. They're coming off of a game tonight, and they have to play again on Saturday. Against Sac Republic. Yeah, they're playing Sac Republic now. So I don't know. In my mind, I think it's easy. It's obviously, like, everybody talks, like, professional athletes shouldn't need kind of extra motivation because, like, they're pros.
Helps.
But in a game like this, there is going to be so much kind of fire, I think, in this game and just playing in front of – I mean, credit to New Mexico. They packed that stadium too. So with the eighth notch out there as well representing it in New Mexico, I think, like – one, like Daniel, like you said, it has the potential to kind of be that like derby defining game,
right?
Where it's like this is where it became a true rivalry and not just hey,
yeah,
this is the closest team to us,
yeah,
or whatever. But yeah, I think this is the moment where Mark's got to look and just say like this, you know, he's got to have it on the wall of like these are the guys like we're taking them down, and right. This is how we catapult the rest of our season.
Yeah.
So I think at the risk of things going horribly fucking wrong on Saturday, I think that this is a game where it'll kind of make or break the end of the season in a lot of ways, because it could be the biggest confidence boost we've ever gotten, or it could just fucking crush us.
Bury us.
I know that's like heavy as shit because it's the 21st game of the season. We've got, you know, we got 17 more games to play.
But it could make a difference.
But it's just a lot of different factors that make this game so, so, so important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the question now is like, what is going to go down?
Tell you what, if the first shot does not hit the crossbar or the post, we're going to win.
I think it's like Christian said, we need to score early.
Yeah.
There's no indication in the way we've been playing lately that that's going to happen. But if it does, then I think we'd be well on our way to getting a result. I'm going to be really optimistic. I'm going to say 2-1. 2-1 to the good guys.
I like it.
Maybe Keith Svetter comes in and, you know, straightens all our motherfucking teeth.
So a brace from the orthodontist.
I'm
being
ridiculous, but I'm going with it.
Yeah, I would enjoy that.
That would be nice. Hey, why not? Let's get like a combo Seb. Both Sebs getting on the score sheet. That would be dope.
Oh my God.
That would be cool.
Seb squared.
Yeah. So 2-0.
Let's go for that. Man. See, y'all went optimistic, so now I'm like real. Because there's only two ways to go, either pessimistic or super optimistic, right. Which is just, it feels like I'm inviting disaster.
Could just go 0-0.
So I'll go for the slightly pessimistic. I know I just bigged up this game, but I'm going to go for a 1-1, okay. a scoring draw, which I know is like neutered or whatever and no fun. But I'm trying to, I don't know. I need to find out what Christian says about this game, 'cause he got the last one exactly right. So yeah. I need to know what Christian's predicting, 'cause that's what I'm putting my money on. No, I'll say, yeah, say one. I think Jerome definitely is going to have that coming back from injury. I think he'll have been, you know, sitting in the stands or whatever, watching these last couple of games, just tearing his hair out.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think he'll be just chomping at the bit to get back out there and get on the score sheet. He's in, you know, kind of a minor slump himself.
Right.
Whatever he went. 4 or 5 games.
He went like a month without scoring.
Yeah. And that was like the big storyline or whatever. So I think he gets back on it with a goal, a big goal. And, you know, we come out of there with a point, and I think ultimately we see that as like a point earned away.
Yeah.
So ultimately this game is about
not losing
probably. But yeah. I do think a win is potentially like season changing, like it could literally be, you know, if you win that, if you go in there and get 3 points, that's just such a huge confidence boost for the whole team.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen it before where, I don't know, yeah, I'm going way too big, but Real Madrid beats Barcelona and then they go on to win the league, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, they're momentum changers.
Yeah. So. Yeah, those type of games are just, like, yeah, going to be looked at the end of the season and, you know, where people shake out. Because, yeah, I mean, you never know, too. The way the West is right now, it's so close that those last playoff spots are going to literally be determined by, like, a point or two, probably.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh, remember that one game we could have won, but we didn't? Yeah, we're out.
And as a Liverpool fan, I've done plenty of that type of hand-wringing, yeah, over the last, like, however many seasons. So it is just, I don't know. I'm worked up about it. I think, I don't know, I feel good, but I'm also keeping a corner of my eye on the result in New Mexico tonight because,
yeah,
I don't love that they may carry, like, a win into our game against them in a few days.
Are they away? I thought they were away.
I think they are away.
Yeah, they are away.
Yeah, holy crap.
So I'm glad they've traveled.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Halftime win 0.
Yeah. I'm hoping, I think Sac Republic makes a comeback here in the second half. And
they have a solid team. Didn't they just trash, like, Tulsa, like, 6-1, like, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, they've been, like, up and down.
Yeah.
Because they'll go, you know, like, we comfortably beat them, yeah, and then they'll go win a couple of games, and then they'll lose, like, 4 in a row, and then
that's just the league. Look at Fresno.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Yeah. So, madness in the West, as usual, and what is it? The Rio Grande...
Grand Derby.
Grand Derby.
I guess.
Is that the official name of this rivalry? The Rio Grande Derby will be next Wednesday. I think we'll probably skip, like, a Tuesday episode, but we'll probably do an episode later next week after the New Mexico game, and then back again because we play Timbers 2, I think, here in El Paso, just a couple of days later. So. Yeah. We'll have a little bit of a hiatus, and then we'll be back with two quick episodes right after that. So you guys will be able to get all of the, you know, hashtag content.
That content.
Hopefully with a full crew.
As you could possibly want. As we're getting ready to sign off, I think it's worth mentioning that Tacoma Defiance just beat Las Vegas 4-1.
What?
So the Western Conference is impossible.
Did you check if maybe Jordan Morris was on the lineup or something like that? Come on.
Yeah, let's, I don't know. We'll have to research how many Sounders were down.
Dempsey came out of retirement, wants to get a couple minutes.
I'm looking at potentially, hold on. I was about ready to end the episode, but, like, we may need to talk about this. Las Vegas had 3 players sent off. They finished with 8.
Oof. Okay, then. That makes sense.
When did they get sent off?
The 70th minute, the 75th minute, and the 86th minute. So but the crazy thing is that Tacoma had, like, 3 goals before the first sending off. So
they were
only
just
one goal.
Pissed.
Yeah.
Vegas is the most random team. Like,
I guess. That's the content right there.
Yeah,
like,
really.
3 sendings off in one game. Jesus Gonzalez, Javon Torre, and Sammy Ochoa all saw red. That's just,
it's like, nuts. Did you notice that against us, I saw their center back, and I was just like, this guy is amazing. Like, I want to play like him. Sure enough, I go research. He plays for LAFC. Like, they got him for that weekend.
Oh, it was, what's his name? Dragovic or something like that.
I was like, this guy is solid.
Yeah.
And he's gone?
Yep.
He plays for LAFC?
Yep. Yeah, that was like an emergency loan.
Yeah.
Only plays against us and then has, like, an absolute, like, blinder of a game. Yeah. Just, like, completely shuts us down and then goes back to LA. Yeah. Anywho, though, as we draw to a close, we hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. And, I mean, hopefully we'll all be enjoying a win at the next episode. You guys can find us, all the podcast episodes. You can listen to the back catalog if you're into that. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, other podcast apps that I don't even know exist. We're on all of them. If you search Seriously Loco Soccer Pod, you can probably find us. And we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and we're getting better about posting on all of them rather than just Twitter. So we're trying to expand the base there. And yeah, find us on there, interact, and we answer listener questions in every single episode. And we love to interact with the listeners. It's awesome to be able to get, you know, more perspectives than just the people in the room. And yeah, so find us there, hit us up. If something's bugging you about the club or, you know, or you're curious about something, just ask. We don't have all the access, but we have enough to be able to find stuff out. So anyways, I hope you guys have enjoyed, and we will talk to you next Thursday after we beat New Mexico United. So until then, stay loco, guys.